हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. For page 46. Sri Sukadev Goswami continues, My dear King Parikit, I have now described the wonderful power of Krishna as displayed when the Lord delivered the king of the elephants. O best of the Kuru dynasty, those who hear this narration become fit to be promoted to the higher planetary systems. Simply because of hearing this narration, they gain a reputation as devotees. They are unaffected by the contamination of Kali Yuga, and they never see bad dreams. Therefore, after getting up from bed in the morning, those who desire their own welfare, especially the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and in particular the Brahmin Vaishnavas, should chant this narration as it is, without deviation, to counteract the troubles of bad dreams. You're not happy with the fuller Shruti.
I am. It's funny.
but you're looking at it, oh, I already did the work, now why is it they're saying I have to do the work? No, because the point is that means absorption in this will, but it's just a matter of how absorbed we are. So in other words, if from now on you never have any bad dreams while we're going through, you are well absorbed. But if you have bad dreams, then remember this and then they'll go away, the effect will go away, and then slowly.
And what about chanting Hare Krishna?
Yes, why not?
Because sometimes we say that it's like Ekaishi Mahatmya, all that stuff, that it tinged. It's not pure devotion service. Bhagavatam is pure unalloyed.
So yes.
This is what...
So it's just saying you won't have bad dreams.
So it's like side effect.
Yeah. Can I counteract the troubles of bad dreams? Because the point is if there's a bad dream and it makes trouble for your devotional service, then you want to counteract that so it doesn't bother your devotional service.
Difficulties also bother your devotional service.
That's why we chant Hare Krishna. So the point is that anything connected with Krishna will counteract the difficulties of the material world. So chanting, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, any of those things like that. That's the whole point. Because we see is that what happens here is that you have a devotee, he's surrendered to the Lord protects him, and then from that he attains perfection, goes back to Godhead. So that's what we're remembering. So technically any pastime of the Lord will do that. But it's just mentioned this one specifically is, you know, if one's having any troubles, then this is naturally one too. You know, because it works out. He's having trouble, he's relieved you're having trouble, you know, like that. Something's like this.
Maharaj?
Yes.
What is the purpose of Parashruti? Is it to attract the ordinary people who are result-oriented so that they can somehow or other be attracted to
it? It's one of the things, but it's also just the glories of the Lord. That by anything connected with the Lord, then you get all these nice things, all these things happen. So it's just, you know, therefore the Lord's glorious, so then why not?
Then do we also have Phalashruti for Vedanta Sutra?
I'm not sure if Vedanta Sutra has a Phala Shruti. Does it have a Phala Shruti? Vedanta Sutra?
I don't remember reading Phala Shruti.
I'm not sure if Gyanis are much into Phala Shrutis.
And Phala Shruti is what?
Phala Shruti means, the phal means the fruit you can get. So the Shruti means the glories of what benefits you get from from that particular study or?
Sometimes we do have it and sometimes we don't have it. Oh, it's not necessary?
It's just, see, in other words, for us, it's the glories of the Lord, that by hearing the Lord's pastimes and that, then these are glories that you get. Mm-hmm. You know, that's there, but it's not that we're interested specifically to get those, but this is what comes by the process. So it just brings more glory. So if you have someone who is interested in these things, then that's what's there. You know, just like I know one devotee, an astrologer, and so then you have the nine planets, they have the nine deities. So if there's a weakness in a planet or something, he has them read that part of the Bhagavatam, which is about that particular incarnation of the Lord, you know, and gets them to chant a certain, so much japa and everything. Because it's understood, as you know, by doing reading, by doing japa, by doing pujas, by doing these things you can get. So he just gets them to all do devotional service. And it doesn't matter what their background is. So, you know, they can be Muslim, anything, but, you know, they're doing all these things. So that work? Yeah. Verses 16 to 26. The Lord blesses Gajendra. See, it means, in other words, we have to be comfortable with the point is we're not interested in material benefits, but if it describes that benefits come, we're not bothered by that either. It's not that, you know, if it's not about material benefits, then it shouldn't talk about material benefits. You know, it's just a matter of, it doesn't matter. It's just, that's the side thing. So. Verses 16 to 26, the Lord blesses Gajendra. O best of the Kuru dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, being thus pleased, addressed Gajendra in the presence of everyone there. He spoke the following blessings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, freed from all sinful reactions are those who rise from bed at the end of night, early in the morning, and fully concentrate their minds with great attention upon my form. Your form, this lake, this mountain, the caves, the gardens, the cane plants, the bamboo plants, the celestial trees, the residential quarters of me, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the three peaks of Trikuta Mountain made of gold, silver, and iron, my very pleasing abode, the ocean of milk, the white island, Swetadweep, which is always brilliant with spiritual rays, my mark of Srivatsa, the Kustuba gem, my Vaijayanti garland, my club, Kaumodiki, my Sudarshan disc and Panchajanya Kansha, my bear, Garuda, the king of the birds, my bed, Seshanaga, my expansion of energy, the goddess of fortune, Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, Prahlad, my incarnations like Matsya, Kurma, and Varaha, my unlimited, all auspicious activities, which yield piety to he who hears them, the sun, the moon, the fire, the mantra Omkara, the absolute truth, the total material energy, the cows and Brahmins, devotional service, the wives of Soma and Kasyapa, who are all daughters of King Daksha, the rivers Ganges, Saraswati, Nanda, and Jamuna, Kalindi, the elephant Airavata, Dhruva Maharaj, the seven rishis, and the pious human beings. My dear devotee, unto those who rise from bed at the end of night and offer me the prayers offered by you, I grant an eternal residence in the spiritual realm at the end of their lives. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, after giving this instruction, the Lord, who is known as Hrishikesha, bugled with his Panchajanya Kansha. In this way, pleasing all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, he then mounted the back of his carrier, Garuda. 16 to 26. So in other words, anything connected with the Lord, anything connected with those connected with the Lord, anything connected with the situations that are connected with the devotees of the Lord, everything, because you remember it connected to the Lord. That's the whole point. So that which is connected to the Lord, that will always be auspicious. Yes.
Can we say that this is Paravidya? Whatever he mentioned.
Yes, because why are we thinking of Trikuta Mountain? We're thinking, wow, that's what, you know, which travel agent, you know, has, you know, the arrangement. No, if you're thinking like that, yes, it'll be trouble. But we're thinking of that because that's where Gajendra was. Right, and then Gajendra, and then his pastime with the Lord. So that's why then all these different things, because they're connected to the Lord and his devotees, that's why they're... Then it means the Bhagavatam is Paravidya. Right? But it should be in the context of what the Bhagavatam is saying. That it's, in other words, remembering about it that is connected to the Lord. That's what makes it special. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? If we're just connected to, we're just thinking about sugarcane plants and stuff like that, then yeah, we might have a problem. And I wonder if that guy's still outside the front gate, and might not be the same. But we're thinking of all those different things that are there, because those are all out in the wild. Cane, I'm not sure if cane, if you can cultivate it to grow, in your own garden. But otherwise, they go out in the forest, and out there, then that's where the plants grow.
Mahesh?
Yes?
It was saying in the description how if you recite these prayers at the end of every night, then one goes back to God in this very life.
Yes.
And something I've always had difficulty understanding is, Prabhupada also said many times that if you chant 16 rounds and follow the process, I'll take you back to Godhead. So the way I always interpreted it was that means that then you will get the mercy to go to the nine stages of bhakti. You'll go through Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema,
right,
very, very quickly. But I find when I discuss this with different devotees, they seem to carry another understand that even if I'm not perfect in my life, I'll somehow get to go back to Godhead.
It means if you remember Krishna at the end of life, then you will go back to Godhead.
Doesn't it have to be in a certain mood, with a certain relationship, with a certain feeling at heart?
What about Shishupal?
He was already associated with the Lord.
I wouldn't do that. What's the example? When they talk about Shishupal, what's the example?
That out of anger, he remembered the Lord.
Yeah. So Narad Muni's making the point is, if you remember the Lord fully, no matter what the relationship, you'll always be benefited. And then the Acharyas point out that if the demons are benefited, then what about the devotees who remember the Lord favorably? So they get even more benefit. Because all those persons, they remember the Lord, then even they're killed by the Lord, where do they go? Tallahassee? I mean, where do they end up? Not in Jersey. Okay? They end up in Vaikuntha. So you want to get into Braj, that takes a little bit more specific thinking.
Right. So when it says that you'll go back to Godhead at the end of this life by reciting these prayers, when Prabhupada said, I'll take you back to Godhead, that means that by their mercy you'll remember Krishna at the time of death. And then you'll go.
Yes, but you have to also want that. In other words, if you want that this is, you want to qualify, that you're qualified to go back to Godhead, therefore whatever instructions are given in that matter, so you're chanting, you read this, or whatever it is that you're inspired. Like that one devotee who danced all night, for Krishna, like that. But the point is you're making the endeavor, Krishna being pleased with that endeavor, that's how you get results. Right. You understand? Because the point is Gokul, it's perfect. Let's go through this. Is Gokul back to Godhead?
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have a problem with that one. Okay, some do. Some do, but,
It's in the real Bhagavatam.
Okay, so that's there. Then, if that's the case, then all the devotees who get the spiritual, get birth in Vrindavan, are they all on the platform of prema?
No.
So that means when you're saying you have to go through the nine stages, yes, you do have to go through the nine stages. But the point is that doesn't mean you have to get all through all the nine stages before death. Because if you're on prema, why do you have to go to Gokul? You go to Gokul to get trained. So that means Gokul is for those who are trying to get to the platform of prema. Right? So the earlier you are in the process means that's where you're going to be there. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah, so that means then those different things have to be removed. Otherwise, why is it, just as an example, like with the gopis, why is it when the first night of the rasa dance, then certain gopis, they all go, no problem. Certain gopis get stopped, and then in their anxiety, they get purified, then they go. Others get stopped, they don't go. But they get purified, they go next time. You understand? In other words, they're not on the same levels of realization. Because if you're, unless you're on the platform of samadhi in Smarandasa, then how you can go? Right? Because Krishna, his interaction with the devotees, he's always remembering them. So if you're not always remembering him, so if you're on a lower level than samadhi, you know, smriti, anusmriti, and all these things, then you're not qualified to go.
This was my doubt. But then devotees always tell me, no, Prabhupada said, I'll take you back. That means it doesn't...
That you're take back, you're already in Gokul. That's back. That's what I'm talking about. See, most will think, no, back means Goloka. Yes, you'll get there. You go to Gokul first, and Prabhupada makes that very clear also.
Right.
He says it's the rare soul who goes directly to Goloka. Why? Because within this body, they're already through meditation in the pastimes in Gokul, and in there they come to the platform of prema. So therefore, they've already been in Gokul, but while they're in this body, they were there through meditation. Then they'll go directly to Goloka. But if you haven't done that, then you go to Gokul. In Gokul, you'll go through the process, get to the platform of prema, and then you'll go back. But Haridas Thakur also mentions that you can get stuck there in Gokul if you think I'm a great devotee or I'm the guru of Vaishnavas. And he says you can remain there hundreds of births if you have that attitude. Because that's the most subtlest form of I'm the controller and enjoyer.
Now it's clear.
Okay? Yeah, so the whole point is it's a very straightforward process. Right? So, in other words, Vaishnavism is the perfect balance of the proper sentiment with the proper understanding. So if there's more sentiment, less understanding, or more understanding and less sentiment, there'll always be a problem. So these two have to be balanced. So we can talk very technically about these very advanced things because they're just, that's just facts the way they are. That's the truth. You know, you understand? But those who get too sentimental about it without the proper qualification, that's a distraction. That's not important. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, in other words, you try to arrange your life so that you're always remembering Krishna. So at the time of death, you remember Krishna. You'll go back to Godhead, means to go cool. Then in Gokul, then you'll get trained there how to serve Krishna. Right? So the point is you have a keen focus on Krishna, you'll get the association of his eternal associates. From them, you'll gain that mood of that attachment to Krishna. You gain purva rag. Right? It means full attachment. Then from that, you'll be able to enter into the pastimes of Krishna. Otherwise, you'll be in Braj, but you won't be in the pastimes. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the whole point. Is that so? You have to be eager. So if you're not eager, then you'll be there for a while, but eventually, because everybody there knows Krishna and is all a devotee, so therefore at some point it will kind of catch your attention. It's just a matter of is it sooner or later. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the point. Okay. Yes. Okay. Chapter 5. The demigods appeal to the Lord for protection. Pratigya. Activities dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if performed in small measure, never go in vain. Right? So anything done connected to Krishna is eternal. It'll always last. Right? That's not a problem. Material things, yes. Even you're getting nice results, it's going good, at some point it will go away. Because if not, even it lasts the length of this body, the body goes away. And with the body, everything else goes away. Right? There's a saying, you can't take it with you. Right? Of course, that does not mean your polluted consciousness. That you can take with you. In fact, you do. But you know, everything else that you like, that's what you can't take with you. Okay, so whatever's done in connection to Krishna, that lasts. That doesn't go bad. Right? That's eternal. Chapter 5 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Sukadeva Goswami question 8.5 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 8.5.11. King Parikit inquired, O great Brahmana, Sukadeva Goswami, why and how did Lord Vishnu churn the ocean of milk? For what reason did he stay in the water as a tortoise and hold up Mandara Mountain? Okay, so now we've had elephants, crocodiles. Now we're going to get a tortoise. Okay? Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadev Goswami question 8.5 of Srimad Bhagavatam. We just asked 3.5.
It's 4.
Oh, the previous one was 4. I thought it was 5 because it was 8.5. And then now this is still an 8.5, so it could be 8.5.1 and 8.5.2, right? Point 2, okay. Okay, so he did it by the okay. How did the demigods obtain the nectar, and what other things were produced from the churning of the ocean? Kindly describe all these wonderful activities of the Lord. Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives an answer to questions 8.4 and 8.5 in chapters 5 through 12. Oh, really? 5 through 12, and that'll be the churning of the milk ocean? Oh, okay. So that was, okay, on Gajendra. Yeah, so this churning the milk ocean, all these are stories that all the Puranas will have. It's just a matter of which aspect they'll bring out, where there'll be more detail or less or some other thing like that. So each Purana will have all of these. But Bhagavatam has one story that none of them have, and that's the one of Ritrasura. But otherwise, here's another story like this, because they tell here. So this one has more detail than others in general, like that.
The Bhagavatam or this
Bhagavatam? The Bhagavatam. This story in the Bhagavatam has details of how they bring the mountain and drop the mountain. And others, it's just that it's just picked up and brought over there in the first place. They don't even bother trying to lift it. But, you know, because Bhagavatam's pointing out, you know, because you just want to know what's happening. But Bhagavatam's pointing out how the Lord is supreme and the demigods are not. So therefore, you'll have this aspect, they'll bring it and drop it. Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika.
Will it show the connection between the previous chapter and this chapter?
Will it show?
Otherwise, it's kind of.
Means when we just said, since we're on, you know, the subject of animals, then what about, you know. I'm sure there is some connection. Because remember, we're still discussing manas, right? Like that. So then these are things that happen during the times of the manas. And then, is that okay? The story is about the manas. Because the Bhagavatam, Purana means the story is about primary creation, secondary creation, the Prajapatis, the manus, and the kings. So then in that, primary creation, secondary creation, those generally go together. And they're complete in themselves. But then when they get into the Prajapatis, because Prajapatis are there for a long time, right? And they are the source of everybody in the universe. So then you start with one Prajapati, and then their descendants, that would go into manus, that would go into kings, that would go into, and then you go back to the next one. You know, or that one he had, remember we did Akuti, and then we did Devahuti, and then, you know, like that. Who is Prasuti? That was his wife.
That's Daksha's
wife. Okay. Okay.
It's like we've never heard it before.
Yeah. No, it's does that make sense? So they'll just go through like that. And so then as the questions go, it'll move. So if there's no question, he'll just move on. But if the question comes up, then... So this may be a story that was told by someone else because he asked a question. So in answering the question, instead of just saying themselves, they refer to a story where that same question was discussed. And in that question, there might be other stories. Because in that discussion, different questions were asked. And then you go through that, so it answers the main question. But at the same time, other interesting points are made. Then it will go back to where they were before that came up. You understand? So that's a dialogue. That's how dialogue works. It goes, you know, it moves as the audience and speaker are discussing. So that's what we see. Vedanta Sutra doesn't do that. That's Nyaya Prashtan. It just starts with a point, goes through all the points, and then, you know, takes the next you know, approach, and then goes through that. So that's how the intelligence works. It goes like that. But the point is the mind makes the decision. So that's why you see is then the Bhagavatam puts that Vedanta philosophy in the context of how the mind works. You know, does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why then it's done like that. Right? So we see both have their interest like that. Okay, Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the fifth and sixth manus. Okay. And it also describes the prayers of the demigods and the curse of Durvasa Muni. All part of the scene. The brother of Tamasa. Let's just, okay, let us try this. You know this mall, I went to that yesterday, it was quite nice. Oh, speaking of nice, I just had this, they made some really great cupcakes, and like that. Oh, that person, but her friend is this, and then, you know, like this, and that, and that, you know.
That's what I feel sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm saying, that's how the conversation works. So, here, why should it be any different? So there's some connection that's there, but it has the overall, because the six questions that were asked in the beginning of the Bhagavatam in the first canto, you know, about the Lord and his incarnations and everything like that, that's what's being described through all 12 cantos. At the same time is that so in describing that, he's going to describe the Bhagavatam. And then the question comes up, well, how did the Bhagavatam come to be spoken? So then the rest of the first canto, right? And then the Bhagavatam goes through, and it goes through all these different things, and it has those 10 subject matters. So then that's all being discussed, right? So the 10 is just a furtherance of, in more detail of those 5, right? So it includes this, you know, the absolute truth. It makes a distinction between creation and maintenance, right? Yeah, okay. So, you know, these different things, because it brings out the higher principles of devotion. Right? And in that, then it goes down through all these different... Yeah? The brother of Tamasa, the fourth Manu, who has previously been described, was the fifth Manu, Raivata. The sons of Raivata included Arjuna, Bali, and Vindhya. During the reign of this Manu, Indra, the king of heaven, was known as Vibhu. Among the demigods were the Bhutarayas, and among the 7 rishis were Hiranyaroma, Vedashira, and Urdhvabahu. The rishi known as Subra, by his wife Vikunta, gave birth to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta. This Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested a Vaikunta planet at the request of Rama Devi. His power and activities are mentioned in the third canto. The sixth Manu was Chakshusha. Right here, it also always mentions the rishis and that, because it mentioned before, Krishna said that knowing all these things, then it's also remembering that, then it's connected to him, because this is all his arrangement. So at each Manu, everybody changes. So that's his arrangement. So yeah. The sixth Manu was Chakshusha, the son of Chakshumanu. Among the sons of the sixth Manu were Purusha and Sudyumna. During the reign of this Manu, Mantra-Druma was Indra, the king of the heavenly planets. Among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the 7 rishis were Havishman and Viraka. The wife of Viraja, whose name was Devasambhuti, gave birth to Ajita, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Ajita, taking the shape of a tortoise and holding the mountain known as Mandara on his back, churned the ocean and produced nectar for the demigods. Connection? Okay. Myers Pariket was very eager to hear about the churning of the ocean, right? So then the pastimes of the Lord. So since that one, the incarnation of, what was his name, Vaikuntha, had already been discussed in the third canto, so we won't go into detail here. But now in going through the Manus, then another incarnation comes up that he hasn't heard about, so that he asked about, so that will get into here. And therefore Sukadeva Goswami began to explain to him how the demigods, having been cursed by Durvasa Muni, were defeated in battle by the Asuras, right? Then the natural question comes up, well, how did they get cursed by Durvasa, right? When the demigods were deprived of their heavenly kingdom, they went to the assembly house of Lord Brahma and informed Lord Brahma of what had happened. Then Brahma, along with all the demigods, went to the shore of the ocean of milk and offered prayers to Kirodakshaya Vishnu. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 10, the reign of Raivata and Chakshusha Manu. Verses 11 to 50, Brahma offers prayers to the Lord. Verses 1 to 10, the reign of Raivata and Chakshusha Manu. Sukadev Goswami continued, O King, I have described to you the pastime of Gajendra Moksha, which is most pious to hear. By hearing of such activities of the Lord, one can be freed of all sinful reactions. Now please listen as I describe Raivata Muni, the brother of Tamasa Manu, as the fifth Manu, named Raivata. His sons were headed by Arjuna, Bali, and Vindhya. So here's one brother, his other brother became the next Manu. Just like, I think it was Swayambhuva was there, and then his son became like this. So it goes on. O King, in the millennium of Raivata Manu, the King of Heaven was known as Vibhu. Among the demigods were the Bhutarayas, and among the seven Brahmanas who occupied the seven planets were Hiranyaroma, Vedashira, and Urdhvabahu. From the combination of Subra and his wife, Vikunta, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta, along with demigods who were his personal plenary expansions. Just to please the goddess of fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta, at her request, created another Vaikunta planet, which is worshipped by everyone. 1-5. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 5, Just as the Lord's appearance is called a birth, so the appearance of the Lord's abode is called creating a planet. It is not a material creation, since the Lord and his abode are both eternal. They are described similarly with the intention of saying that they are eternal. Kramasundarbha says, quote, This Vaikunta planet of the son of Vikunta is the same as the original Vaikunta beyond the eight coverings of the universe seen by Brahma before he created the living entities as described in the second canto. So this is Dhruva's planet? I'm not sure. Okay.
This is where Vishnu
is. I would think that is where he is, but it doesn't say specifically. I thought it would have said here. But he says it's beyond the eight coverings of the universe, so that means it's beyond that. So whether that's, it means beyond, meaning it can mean beyond me as a location, or beyond meaning it's not affected by, it's transcendental. Like that. What's his name? We can ask when he shows up. That I know of, I think there's two of them. We always hear of Dhruva Loka, but I think there's two. There's one below Brahma Loka and one above. Three.
Comes in the third chapter of Adi Leela.
And the Adi Leela. So where's the third? So one is would be Dhruva Maharaj's planet. And the other two? You're not sure. But it mentions that there's three.
It mentions which place and all.
Okay, but there's three. So there's three. Okay. It's gone up, right?
Still up.
Okay. Maybe as we go up in the cantos, there gets to be more. Right? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Although the great activities and transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's various incarnations are wonderfully described, sometimes we are unable to understand them. Yet everything is possible for Lord Vishnu. If one could count the atoms of the universe, then he could count the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But no one can count the atoms of the universe, nor can anyone count the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains, The Lord's glorious activities referred to in this connection took place after his personal bodyguards Jaya and Vijaya became daityas, having been cursed by the great sages Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanat Kumar, and Sanandana. Jaya is Hiranyaksha, had to fight with Varahadev. And that same Varahadev is mentioned in regard to the Raivata millennium. The fighting, however, took place during the reign of the first Manu, Swayambhuva. Therefore, according to some authorities, there are two Varahas. According to others, however, Varaha appeared during the regime of Swayambhuva Mana and stayed in the water until that of Raivata Muni. Some may doubt that this could be possible, but the answer is that everything is possible. If one could count the atoms within the universe, one can count the qualities of Lord Vishnu. But the atoms of the universe are impossible for anyone to count, and similarly no one can count the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Right? So there's different ways it comes out. Some it says there's two, some it says it'll be the same one coming twice. Right? So like that. And so then he's known as Sweta Varaha, so there's said to be a white Varaha and a red Varaha. But also it can mean here is that Sweta means he appeared in the Sweta how you say, the Sweta yeah. millennium, but then may have performed his activities, you know, in the later. So any of these, it doesn't matter, because the Lord's glories are unlimited, so how it comes across.
Lord?
Yes.
You usually say that authorities, they never contradict each other, acharyas.
No.
So when they have different opinions, they don't contradict each other.
They're just different aspects of the same thing, or they might be talking about, one's talking about this specific one, one's talking about another millennium, or one's talking about in the previous universe, because as you, or previous ages, like this is going through one day of Brahma, you get all the 14 manas, right? But now someone like Markandeya and Prajapatis and that, they're there for every day of Brahma. So they might tell a story of a different pastime of Varaha. Does that make sense? So how many times, just like, Sanatana Goswami's book on all the different incarnations in Nrisimhadev? No. It's mainly about that I know. It's a known book. Not Hari Vamsa? No. But it's a known book. If you hear the name, so in there he's talking about different times when Nrisimhadev comes in. So we know this one, how he came out of the pillar. But sometimes he comes in through the front gate. Right? Like that. And then there's the whole thing. Sometimes he's so big. When he cuts Hiranyakashipu in half, then he can't find the demon. So he's very in anxiety, looking around, where's the demon? And he can't find him anywhere. And then, you know, after that, when he shakes his hand, he falls out from underneath his fingernail. Because when he cut him in half, it just half stayed under one nail and half under another nail. Yeah, he's that big. Sometimes he comes, like when he comes in the gate, he kills the army first. Right, then he kills Hiranyakashipu, but in this time, our pastime, he kills Hiranyakashipu, then kills the army. So, like that, there's so many different. Does that make sense? So, none of them are contradictory. They're just, it's called kalpa beta, the different kalpas. Because all the same pastimes generally happen every day of Brahma. But it's just, or they can. Regularly, it's just a matter of which kalpa they happened in. So the point is a question is asked, so that pastime that best fits the answer to that question, that pastime is used. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that there's difference or contradiction. It's just you're bringing out different qualities of the Lord since he's unlimited. So that's what they mean, unlimited incarnations. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the son of Chakshusha, known as Chakshusha, was the sixth mana. He had many sons, headed by Purusha and Sudyumna. During the reign of the Chakshusha Manu, the king of heaven was known as Mantradumna. Among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the great sages were Havishman and Viraka. In the sixth Manvantara millennium, Lord Vishnu, the master of the universe, appeared in his partial expansion. He was begotten by Vairaja in the womb of his wife, Deva Sambhuti, and his name was Ajita. By churning the milk ocean, Ajita produced nectar for the demigods in the form of a tortoise. He moved here and there, carrying on his back the great mountain known as Mandara, 7 through 10, verses 11 to 50. Brahma offers prayers to the Lord. King Parikit inquired, O great Brahmana, Sukadev Goswami, why and how did Lord Vishnu churn the ocean of milk? For what reason did he stay in the water as a tortoise and hold up Mandara Mountain? How did the demigods obtain the nectar? And what other things were produced from the churning of the ocean? Kindly describe all these wonderful activities of the Lord. My heart, which is disturbed by the three miserable conditions of material life, is not yet sated with hearing you describe the glorious activities of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of the devotees. Sri Suta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, assembled here at Naimisharanya, when Sukadev Goswami, the son of Dvaipayana, see, now we pulled back from the conversation of Sukadev Goswami and Parikit Maharaj back to Suta and the sages at Naimisharanya. And then sometimes, occasionally, you even pull back to Vyasadeva, where Vyasadeva says something. Then he goes back into the conversation, like that. So it's just, that's how the storyline works, so you understand more of a context, you know. And it makes it more complicated. So no one can get bored, right? When Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Dwaipayana, was thus questioned by the king, he congratulated the king and then endeavored to describe further the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami said, "When the Asuras with their serpent weapons severely attacked the demigods in a fight, many of the demigods fell and lost their lives. Indeed, they could not be revived. At that time, O king, the demigods had been cursed by Durvasa Muni. The three worlds were poverty-stricken, and therefore ritualistic ceremonies could not be performed. The effects of this were very serious." See, the demigods, then they don't disturb the performance of sacrifice because they know that's how the universe is maintained. Because they understand it's the Lord's arrangement. But the demons, they don't understand this. Right? So they go on the principles that we're here, we make things happen. So we come in, we take over, we enjoy ourselves, and if any problem is there, the next generations can work that out, right? You know, it's just like global warming. Hey, we're having a good time, and if there's a problem, you know, our grandchildren can figure it out, right? So that mentality we see is not a new one. So now they stop all these different sacrifices. What they don't understand is all the piety will go, and so therefore the maintenance of the universe will stop. But they're not worried about that. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 16, "It is described that while Durvasa Muni was passing on the road, he saw Indra on the back of his elephant and was pleased to offer Indra a garland from his own neck. Indra, however, being too puffed up, took the garland and without respect for Durvasa Muni, he placed it on the trunk of his carrier elephant. The elephant, being an animal, could not understand the value of the garland, and thus the elephant threw the garland between his legs and smashed it. Seeing this insulting behavior, Durvasa Muni immediately cursed Indra to be poverty-stricken, bereft of all material opulence," right? Because garland is considered one of the kinds of opulences, like that. So because they destroyed the garland, so then you destroy opulence. And here's that Indra, because he is the king of the universe, he thinks he's the supreme, but what happens is that they forget is that the sages are superior, but the sages cooperate and work along with them because they see the greater good of how the universe will function. So then they give good instruction, they do things within. He may ask them to do things, they do it. So then he comes to think, I'm senior to them, when actually, no, he's junior to them. And then, you know, situations like this always kind of work it out. You know, like Indra and then Gautama Rishi and then Indra, you know, and how you say? Yes, all these. They're just again and again and again and again. So there's so many incidents of this because in a day of Brahma there will be 14 Manu. I mean, Manus means 14 Indras. So that means 500,000 Indras in a lifetime of Brahma, so there's going to be plenty of opportunity for this. So even if a small percentage of them do act like that, then the results come, right? Reactions come. Yeah. Yes. No. Okay. Yes.
Still, it appears, you know, kind of gross for Indra, because you know, it's expected from him that he will be a little more, you know, like he gives him.
Well, he probably put it up on here, but then the elephant just grabbed it and then threw it. You know, whatever it is, he gave to the elephant instead of putting it on himself. If he had put it on, everything would have been fine, because Airavata wouldn't take it off his neck. You know. Yes, no, but that's the point, is he becomes proud, and so because of that, see, is let's say, okay, let us, we'll see if this works. There's a situation in which, let's say, between the husband and wife, things are going really well at that moment. Really nice, the interaction's really going really good. And while that's going, you know, the man is very, very comfortable and very, you know, feeling very happy. But in that then, you know, he in that happy mood says something that's kind of ordinary or something that he might say to another man. But because he's in that mood, then, you know, it comes out very naturally. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what Indra what happens to Indra. He becomes so happy being the king of the universe that he sometimes does something stupid. Sorry?
Familiarity breeds contempt.
That's there. It's just that when you're so happy, then you relax and then you do things. And so then, you know, sometimes that has consequences. You know, so that's the whole thing. So, because it means the attitude's wrong. But it's, you know, you can say it's familiarity breeds contempt. But here it's not so much of a contempt. That means that you get familiar and then you start to see a fault. Here it's just that you're so happy that you just act in an ordinary way rather than being, like, in other words, one is very careful. That's why everything got up to that point. But being in that point, one relaxes and then one isn't so careful. Right? And so then it's time for disciplinary action. Yes.
She loses gravity.
Sorry?
Loses gravity.
Loses the gravity, yes. Now, in other words, you're happy, but you should still be aware of the situation. So he's happy, but he loses awareness. He loses due to pride. So, you know, whatever is the reason, it's incompatible. Right, you know, if Indra's sitting there and the other demigods are glorifying him and he's proud, then it matches. It's not going to create such problem, right? Because they're junior to him. But then when he has that pride, when someone senior to him is there, then that's what happened with Brihaspati. Right? Right? Okay. Thus, the demigods afflicted on one side by the fighting of demons and on the other side by the curse of Durvasa Muni lost all the material opulences in the three worlds. To be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. The materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offenses to great personalities. As such, devotees and great saints... This is the way of material opulence. As described by Sukadeva Goswami, dana durma danda, too much wealth makes one blind. That would be the same. Okay. This happens even to Indra in his heavenly kingdom, and what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, means he is pious, so we don't see it happening on a regular basis, but when it does happen, it happens good. Right? But yes.
Still, we see this point comes again and again, that it's not one thing what, you know, what breaks somebody, but it's several things together, then they get, like, really in trouble.
Yes. Well, that's why also as mentioned here, if this happens to Indra, then what to speak of others, right? Because he's very pious and, you know, follows the rules, does everything nicely. That's how he's got himself that. And still, like you say, all these things build up and then he makes problems. So let alone others who are less qualified, that it takes less to throw them off.
Yeah.
Like that. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You're the fourth boss of Indra, you know, who insulted Durvasa. But along with Indra, even the other demigods were being punished, you know, eventually.
No, but point is Indra is what?
He's a king.
Of?
Heaven.
Yes, and that includes?
All the demigods.
Demigods, right. So that point is him losing his position means it includes them also if it's very bad. See, if it's a small thing, then that's one thing. But this is a major thing. He's disrespecting someone senior to him. So therefore, it affects everybody connected him, just like the king. The king punishes somebody improperly. It affects not only him, his family, his relatives, his kingdom, everything goes. Does that make sense? So in this case, this was severe enough that it affected all the demigods also. Yeah. Okay. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons. Otherwise, he will fall down. So there, that point, remaining sober and well-behaved. If that sobriety is there, then you can see properly. Like that, because that's the point. The sobriety, he becomes intoxicated with his wealth. So because of that, he becomes blind, right? Because when you get intoxicated, they don't see very well, right? They always seem to bump into everything and fall over everything, right? So that's the whole point, is that when he becomes wealthy, he becomes intoxicated with that. He becomes blind to the actual proper behavior. Yeah?
So does that mean that, because they say too much wealth, so, you know, that's relative. Because Yudhishthira Maharaj also had a lot of wealth, but he put it in context.
But he was always sober and well-behaved. Because if you'd say one thing about Yudhishthira, he was always well-behaved.
Right.
Bhima sometimes may get a little bit upset. Arjuna, you know, will you know, you can understand he's upset. You know, like that. Nakul and Sahadev, they will say so many things.
So this is like a protection, really.
Yeah, that's why he was so well able to maintain that position. So that's the whole point. Is it depends. It's relative to the amount of qualities you have, like that. More qualities, then the higher that it will go. Less qualities, then the less it will take. You know, there's a Marwari saying, "Shallow stream floods quickly." Right? You just put a little water into a shallow stream, immediately it floods. So a little bit of opulence for an ordinary person, and immediately then they're very proud. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So does that mean if you've got like better qualities, that means you don't show that you're upset or something?
That's another aspect. There is a, I'm not sure where we're talking about that. I think Bharat Muni talks about it. I think he's talking about it because in connection with acting, so then you know how to act, you know, as the person. So then he's saying the first class man, something very, you know, let's say, it talks about, just use the example of happiness. For the first class man, then something very wonderful happens, something, you know, really good happens. Then you get a, you know, a slight smile, just a little, okay, that's nice, you know. Then the second class, and he'll be there, and he'll be, you know, all like chirpy and stuff like that, too much like that. And then the third class, he's the one that's all that, yes, you know, all that kind of jazz, you know, running, sliding on the grass, putting the t-shirt over the head, you know, that kind of jazz. That's third class. Right? But people aren't impressed by first class because there's no show. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if you want entertainment, you have to have the third class. Right? There is no reality show or anything else where they get together a whole bunch of really high class, cultured, you know, traditional gentlemen, and then they sit around and some, you know, and the host brings up some topic, and, you know, so, you know, what about when you made your first million? And they go, yes, that was a nice day, you know. And so, yes, and then everyone's going, yes, I like this show. Yeah, you know, kind of, yeah, right? No. I mean, you could do the same thing, you know, pan in, you know, like that, then, you know, like that, and then he goes, yes. You know, like that. It's probably not going to have the same effect as, you know, the soapies.
The topic was very entertaining.
That's theirs. He's talking, but you'd see is when there's something in that, he's not, you know, it's like he's looking at the fifth canto and all that. There's just this smile on his face, you know, seeing all the people in hell, you know, nice paintings that the devotees did and all. Because here, you know, it's nice work. So. It doesn't mean you can't be, but I'm just talking about the reactions. Two different things. No?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the whole point. That sobriety will keep. So you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, he gets the arrangement, and that we don't hear is that he's jumping up and down when, you know, Krishna came, he called Indra, and he arranged the city, and then Vishwakarma came, and then all this and that, and then, no. You know, when the Rajasuya sacrifice ended, you know, then he was jumping up and down. No, it's just everything's always sober and all that. So the point is the more the senses are controlled, then the more facility you can have. That's the difficulty. We want all the facility with no control. but the two go together. No control, less facility, more facility. I mean, more control, more facility. But you know, you can't. It's, does that make sense? That's how energy works. You want it more, you get less. You want less, you get more. So that's the point. If you work on nice karma, you can get everything. You want everything, you'll get nothing. So when it says all opulence comes, that means because someone is devoted. And so because of that, then they have all facility. But now they're just using Krishna's service.
It seems that this idea at present comes from worshiping celebrities, because that's what they got. No sense control and they
yes.
Money.
Yes. But the point is how long do they have the money? Right? I mean, what does it mean when we say a Hollywood wedding? Right? It means, you know, 6, 7 months, 9 months, and then that's it. You know? Some of them are even quicker. You know, like that. There's been some of them that I think was, I forget what it was, 5 days or 11, something like that. There was something that was really... yeah, so they have the money. They have, but if you look up all those Hollywood personalities, how many have money? A few have, but they're the ones that are more sober and stuff like that. And they're generally not the ones in the tabloids. The ones in the tabloids are the ones without the money. Is that, you know, so that's the thing. It's those more sober ones, they go through throughout, you know. Like that. In other words, let's say you there's a saying, the longer it takes for you to get to the top, the longer you stay at the top. So these ones that come in and just bang, they suddenly out of nowhere, they're big, then they also disappear that quickly. Confirm. Like that. Right, so there are ones now that still, when they're, you know, 70, 80 years old, they're still playing major roles, and they've been doing that their whole life, you know, like that. So those are, you know, like that. Those are your sober ones. Those deal nicely. Those, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but at the same time, as it is karma from last life, but if they waste it, then next life they won't have any. They have such bad qualities, they waste their money, next life they'll be poor. They'll be the one reading the tabloid. Yeah. And they show them, that was me last life. Yeah. You know. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Indra, Varuna, and other demigods, seeing their lives in such a state, consulted among themselves, but they could not find any solution. Then all the demigods assembled and went to the peak of Sumera Mountain. There, in the assembly of Lord Brahma, they fell down to offer Lord Brahma their obeisances, and then they informed him of all the incidents that had taken place. Upon seeing that the demigods were bereft of all influence and strength, and that the three worlds were consequently devoid of auspiciousness, and upon seeing that the demigods were in an awkward position, whereas all the demons were flourishing, Lord Brahma, who is above all the demigods and who is the most powerful, concentrated his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus being encouraged, he became bright-faced and spoke to the demigods as follows. Srila Prabhupada comments, after hearing from the demigods the real situation, Lord Brahma was very much concerned because the demons were unnecessarily so powerful. Right, the demigods lost their positions and their power, that's one thing. You know, it means it's not good. But the demons come up, then that means they're really going to make a mess. Right, because that's the point. Demons means they make a mess. That's their job. Right, demigods means they keep everything maintained. Right, so demons means they'll destroy everything. Demigods means they'll maintain everything. When demons become powerful, the entire world is placed in an awkward position because demons are simply interested in their own sense gratification and not in the welfare of the world. Demigods or devotees, however, are concerned with the welfare of all living beings. Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, left his ministership and went to Vrindavan for the benefit of the entire world. Lokanam hitakari now. This is the nature of a saintly person or demigod. Even impersonalists think of the welfare of all people. Thus, Brahma was very much concerned at seeing the demons in power, right? So, like we saw before, is that when we were talking in Vedanta Sutra, or no, was it in Vedanta Sutra? Was it in here? No, it was, I think, in here, where the impersonalists, they go up to their transcendental position, but they get bored, so they come down to the philanthropic position. But so we're talking about that as a weakness. We're talking there. But here we're talking about it that those who follow Shastra, those who do things according to what is authority, then they'll care about others. Right? So even if even the impersonalists do, then, you know, that's, we can understand that's the proper standard. Right? But those who don't, that aren't worried about that, the demons, they then go against everything and always make a trouble because they're interested in sense gratification. That's always going to create a problem. Right? Because if you're worried about others' welfare, things can be prosperous. If you're worried about your sense gratification, it will always break things down. Lord Brahma said, I, Lord Shiva, all of you demigods, the demons, the living entities born of perspiration, the living entities born of eggs, the trees, plants sprouting from the earth, and the living entities born from embryos, all come from the Supreme Lord, from his incarnation of Rajagun, Lord Brahma, the Guna avatar, and from the great sages, rishis, who are part of me. So in other words, basically, Rajagun is creating. So he's coming from Rajagun, and then they're coming from him, so therefore then that same element of expanding the universe, then it continues. Let us therefore go to the Supreme Lord and take shelter of his lotus feet. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no one to be killed, no one to be protected, no one to be neglected, and no one to be worshipped. Nonetheless, for the sake of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, according to time, he accepts different forms as incarnations, either in the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, or the mode of ignorance. Now is the time to invoke the mode of goodness of the living entities who have accepted material bodies. The mode of goodness is meant to establish the Supreme Lord's rule. Right? So it maintains. Why? Because it establishes his rule. Because when you follow the rules, then maintenance goes on. You go against the rules, there's destruction. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, if you follow the rules, but it's not to, you know, how you say, in the mode of goodness, then there'll be prosperity, but it won't last. It won't be for maintenance. Does that make sense? It'll just be for sense gratification. The mode of goodness is meant to establish the Supreme Lord's rule, which will maintain the existence of the creation. Therefore, this is the opportune moment to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is naturally very kind and dear to the demigods. He will certainly bestow good fortune upon us. 21-23. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. From this verse, we can understand the situation of Kali Yuga, through which we are now passing. When Krishna appeared, he gave his orders, and when Krishna himself appeared as a devotee, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he showed us the path by which to cross the ocean of Kali Yuga. That is the path of the Hare Krishna movement. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, he ushered in the era for the Sankirtan movement. Weird, it says Sankirtan movement, not politically correct movement. Okay, it is also said that for 10,000 years, this era will continue. This means that simply by accepting the Sankirtan movement and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the fallen souls of this Kali Yuga will be delivered. Though those who have accepted the task of spreading the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in full Krishna consciousness should take this opportunity to deliver people very easily from the clutches of material existence. Our duty, therefore, is to follow the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preach the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world very sincerely. This is the best welfare activity for the peace and prosperity of human society. The whole difficulty is that in this age of Kali, there is no sattva guna and no clearance of the heart, and therefore people are making the mistake of identifying with their bodies. Even the big philosophers and scientists with whom we deal are practically all under the impression that they are their bodies. The other day we were discussing a prominent philosopher, Thomas Huxley, who is proud of being an Englishman. This means that he was in the bodily conception of life. Everywhere we find this same misunderstanding. As soon as one is in the bodily conception of life, one is nothing but an animal like a cat or a dog. Sa eva go karaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84-13. Thus, the most dangerous of the dirty things within our hearts is this misidentification of the body as the self. Under the influence of this misunderstanding, one thinks, I am this body, I am an Englishman, I am an Indian, I am an American, I am a Hindu, I am a Muslim. This misconception is the strongest impediment, and it must be removed, right? So we're very strong on this point. So all this idea that, oh, we're Westerners, or we're Indians, or Indians can do this, Westerners can't, or this and that. And it's funny that it doesn't matter where on the planet, if you agree with that, then you're Westerner. But if you don't agree with it, you agree with that, then, oh, you're not Westerners. Right? Which is very interesting. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita and of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Indeed, Bhagavad Gita begins with this instruction. That's the beginning. We start spiritual life with this point. We're not this body. So the body may have something, but the body, it's a matter of what does this body require? And so it requires a certain thing. Right? It works on that. You have a constitution, it works on that. But the point is those ingredients you can prepare any cuisine of the world with. Right? Does that make sense? You eat bread, it's wheat. You eat a pancake, it's wheat. You eat noodles, it's wheat. Right? Yeah, but does that make sense? It doesn't matter what you make. You know, you make a strudel, it's wheat. That's a falafel. You know, not the falafel, the pita bread, it's wheat. Sorry. Major mistake. you understand? So the thing is to say, oh no, we're Western, we have to eat. No, just say, I have to eat wheat. So that's why there's chapatis. Does that make sense? As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2:13. One cannot be happy in any way within this material world, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 8:16. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So we're thinking, no, this particular situation will make me happy. No, it's what's according to your duty. According to your duty, you situate yourself, not according to your attachment. But your attachment will be dealt with according by your duty. But if you simply approach the attachment directly, then the purpose of that is sense gratification. That falls into the asura category. Right? But if we do it because this is Krishna's laws, then everything's taken care of because his laws are always complete. Everything that comes from Krishna is perfect and complete. So the laws that come from him are also perfect and complete. So everything you want is in those rules. The only problem is you have to be educated enough to understand how everything will be taken care of. Because right? Otherwise we know, it has to be taken care of like this. But there's millions of people who take care of it like this and are not happy. So that's why Krishna says, take care of it like that. Right? So in other words, if you use this, you stay here, and you use that, you go there. That's the basic principle. Yes?
So you're saying that suppose you have a certain attachment to say you want some facility or independence, and you decide maybe I should have a family and I should have a job. So it's not like you enter that stage because of the attachment.
That means you're saying that as a continuous example? You said independence, and you said family life.
I'm presenting a scenario that suppose somebody is very attached to having a facility and an occupation and like this, so he decides, okay, let me enter family life because they provide all of that.
Okay.
But you're saying instead of entering family life because of an attachment, enter it because this is how the Lord says you should deal with attachments.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying. So it's not that it changes. See, many will think that if you do it this way, then I won't get what I want. No, it's the only way you'll get what you want. Because the thing is all the restrictions are there because they'll give you a benefit. All the benefits you've gotten because there's been restrictions. You understand? That's what's not understood. Yeah. So the whole point is that you're trying, so, and in this process, should you be the only one that's getting everything and everybody else won't? We might say yes, but if you put it in, okay, someone else gets everything and you never do. No, the Vedic system is how everybody can get. So that means you have to deal in a certain way so you're not taking their quota or not disturbing their opportunity to get. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that there has to be, that's why restrictions are there, so that your endeavor doesn't affect someone else's, right? So pranamoy is naturally taken care of. All this community stuff and this is already taken care of if you follow the Vedic system. But if you try to follow the community concept without the Vedic system, then where, literally, where is the community? Right? I mean, we say we have a community because we're counting bodies. But actually, as far as relationships and people interacting, how many there is a community. Community means common goals, common values, common methods, common identity. You know what I'm saying? So if you use the modern method, everybody has a different idea. There's some that are compatible, but it's never close. It's never enough to maintain anything very major. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's thought, is that if I follow rules, I'm not independent, I won't get anything, because being independent is what makes me happy. But that's not how it works. If you follow your duties, then you'll get. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, that's just the way it works. Yes.
And this is also what you were saying to the morning, that Vedic culture benefits everyone. It's not like one person does something at the expense of
Yes, yes, yes. Everyone gets benefited. Well, in the modern then, you know, means, let us say, okay, I'm not sure what that
is. It's a small dog.
Or a frog.
On the roof.
A dog? A frog?
Frog.
A frog on the roof. Frogs up there?
You think it's a dog?
Yeah, all that comes to mind is something about frogs and socks and shoes. Okay. What were we talking about?
Benefit,
yes. Let's say that this year there's a bumper crop in something like that. So everyone gets the benefit in that there's lower prices, it's easily available. Because something else will be that you'll make your money in some other way. So the whole thing is it's balanced. But the modern thing is, no, I always have to make my money here. And so if there's extra, then throw it in the ocean. And then the problem with doing that is then that means what you threw in the ocean next time won't be there. Right? Can you imagine a farmer throws tons of something in the ocean? How means if he was eating that, how long would that tons last him? Possibly years. So that means he has years of not having that in his life in the future. Right? So it's a problem. So it's not a good system. Okay. Therefore, not to speak of going to the moon, even if one is promoted to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, there could not be any happiness in the material world. Right? So the moon, then, that's the forefathers, and so that's not that big of a deal to get to. You know, I mean, it's serious, but it's not that. But we're talking Brahmaloka, which is on the very top. So that, then, it's, you know, even there, they're not happy. If one actually wants happiness, one must go to the spiritual world. The material world is characterized by a struggle for existence, and survival of the fittest is a well-known principle. But the poor souls of this material world do not know what is survival and who is fit. That's the point. It is survival of the fittest. But those who survive the material world are those who are fit in Krishna consciousness. Right? They survive. No one else survives. Okay. Survival does not mean that one should die. Survival means that one should not die, but should enjoy an everlasting blissful life of knowledge. This is survival, right? So staying in the material worlds means you die. So that's not survival. So going back to Godhead, that's... The Krishna conscious movement is meant to take every person, make every person fit for survival. Indeed, it is meant to stop the struggle for existence. The Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita give definite directions on how to stop the struggle for existence and how to survive an eternal life. The Sankirtan movement, therefore, is a great opportunity. Simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one becomes completely purified. Thus, the struggle for existence ceases and one goes back home, back to Godhead. Yes? Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikit, subduer of all enemies, Airindama. After Lord Brahma finished speaking to the demigods, he took them with him to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond this material world. The Lord's abode is on an island called Swetadweep, which is situated in the ocean of milk. Srila Prabhupada explains. Maharaj Parikit is addressed here as Airindama, subduer of all enemies. Not only do we have enemies outside our bodies, but within our bodies are many enemies, such as lusty desires, anger, and greed. Maharaj Parikit specifically addresses Airindama because in his political life he was able to subdue all kinds of enemies. And even though he was a young king, as soon as he heard he was going to die within 7 days, he immediately left his kingdom. He did not follow the dictates of enemies within his body, such as lust, greed, and anger. He was not at all angry with the man Muni's son who had cursed him. Rather, he accepted the curse and prepared for his death in the association of Sukadeva Goswami. Death is inevitable. No one can surpass the force of death. Therefore, Maharaj Parikit, while fully alive, wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He is consequently addressed here as Airindama. Yeah, so in other words, those who are on this realized platform, it doesn't matter technically when you're going to die. In other words, you do your duty. You're not looking for death, but you're not looking to stay alive either. That's the actual position of sannyas. You're not worried about living, you're not worried about dying. If you live, that's fine, you'll serve Krishna. If you die, you'll go back to Godhead, you'll serve Krishna. So it's not that you're looking for either. Right? Okay. Another word is surapriya, is also significant. Although Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is equal towards everyone, he's especially inclined towards his devotees. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. The devotees are all demigods. There are two kinds of men within this world. One is called the deva and the other is called the asura. The Padma Purana states, right, so it's two kinds, but one means the lack of the other, right? Because the deva is asura, which means they take shelter of the Lord. So asura means one who doesn't take shelter of the Lord. So in other words, the demigod is the positive, the natural position. The demon is the just lack of that positive position. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Padma Purana states, anyone who is a devotee of Lord Krishna is called a deva, and others, even though they may be devotees of demigods, are called asuras. Ravana, for example, was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but he is described as an asura. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu is described as a great devotee of Lord Brahma, yet he was also an asura. Therefore, only the devotee of Lord Vishnu is called sura, not asura. Lord Krishna is very much pleased with his devotees, even if they are not on the topmost stage of devotional service. Right? So that answers your question before. Yeah, even on the lower stages of devotional service, one is transcendental, right? You want sincere, one trying to do is transcendental. We only point out these things so that we understand the difference, so we can keep ourselves on that transcendental position, so we can tell the difference. We don't get tricked by Maya. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, oh, no, it's this lofty and where everybody else is useless. Does that make sense? Yeah. And if one continues with devotional service, he continues to be a deva or sura. When he continues in this way, Krishna will always be pleased with him and will give him all instructions so that he may very easily return home back to Godhead. So then whatever you require, you want, what you require, you'll get. You don't want, you won't get. That's easy. Like that. Concerning Ajitasya Padam, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the milk ocean of this material world, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Padam kshiro dadhi sta sweta dvipam tamasa prakrite param. The island known as Swetadweep, which is in the ocean of milk, is transcendental. It has nothing to do with this material world. A city government may have a rest house where the governor and important officials stay. Such a rest house is not an ordinary house. Similarly, although Swetadweep, which is in the ocean of milk, is in this material world, it is parampadam, transcendental. Sukadeva Goswami continued. There, at Swetadweep, Lord Brahma offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he had never seen the Supreme Lord. Simply because Lord Brahma had heard about the Supreme Personality of Godhead from Vedic literature, Shruta Purvaya. With a fixed mind, he offered the Lord prayers as written or approved by Vedic literature, Srila Prabhupada explains. It is said that when Brahma and the other demigods go to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Swetadweep, they cannot directly see him, but their prayers are heard by the Lord and the needful action is taken, pratigya. Okay. This we have seen in many instances. The word Shruta Purvaya is significant. We can get direct experience by seeing or hearing. It is not possible to see someone directly. We can hear about him from authentic sources. Sometimes people ask whether we can show them God. This is ludicrous. It is not necessary for one to see God before he can accept God. Our sensory perception is always incomplete. Therefore, even if we see God, we may not be able to understand him. So that's the hetu, the reason. When Krishna was on earth, many, many people saw him but could not understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam. Bhagavad Gita 9:11. Even though the rascals and fools saw Krishna personally, they could not understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even upon seeing God personally, one who is unfortunate cannot understand him. Therefore, we have to hear about God, Krishna, from the authentic Vedic literature and from persons who understand the Vedic version properly. Udaharana. Right? So, how many people that we know that are, you know, big and influential in the world we've actually seen? Means directly. You know what I'm saying? No, but we've heard about them. And because of this, then faith is there that they're there. Then if we see them, oh, then that's even something more special. So if people say, no, unless I can see him, then he doesn't exist. But, you know, how many have seen the American president? You can say, I saw him on TV. That could be anything. That could be an actor. Hollywood's good. You know? That's another thing. Yes, yes. I saw one thing they did. Was it Reagan? Reagan was an actor. They had something from one of his earlier movies where he was some kind of gunman, so he's in a suit and all that, and he comes out and he pulls out a gun and things like that. And they used that, and it was really funny because you think of him, you know, he's trying to be a politician and very proper and that, and they show this other side, you know. So. Yes. It always has to do with California, right? California is, because both, I mean, also... You know how you say? Yes, Schwarzenegger was also. Yeah, California. Yes. Even though Brahma had not seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead before, he was confident that the Lord was there in Swetadweep. Thus, he took the opportunity to go there and offer prayers to the Lord. These prayers were not ordinary concocted prayers. Prayers must be approved by Vedic literature, as indicated in this verse, by the words Daivibhir Girbhihi. In our Krishna conscious movement, we do not allow any song that has not been approved or sung by bona fide devotees. They probably didn't like it when devotees made up their own songs or changed the words or stuff like that. You know, they've made it up. They know the mood. They put it like that. That's why you just don't change things. In our Krishna conscious movement, we do not allow any song that's been... Okay. We cannot allow cinema songs to be sung in the temple. We generally sing two songs. One is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Gaura Bhaktivinoda. This is bona fide. It is always mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it is accepted by the Acharyas. The other, of course, is the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We may also sing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Lochan Das Thakur. But these two songs, Sri Krishna Chaitanya and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, are sufficient to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although we cannot see Him. So then Brahma is able to, though he can't see, he knows from the scriptures, he knows from authority, and that's how then you'll know the Lord, right? Because the Lord being pleased, that's how you'll see Him, not by demanding to see Him.
I recently saw this thing where devotees had created this group and they were singing like bhajans, but with electric guitars and stuff.
That means you can do. Means is that
Prabhupada
they. It's not that Prabhupada didn't do that when he was in Avalon Ballroom when he was doing kirtan. I think different musicians came because the stage was set up for the music. So, but before that, then the devotees came on and Prabhupada gave a lecture and they did kirtan. And I think it went for like an hour. So after some time, different people started coming up on the stage, playing drums, playing different things and all that. So it's not that you can't use it. It just wouldn't be something, you wouldn't be your standard equipment in the temple room. But if they want to do that in their home and that makes them happy as long as the neighbors aren't going to complain, then hey, why not? Yeah, Govindamadi Purusham is done with all that kind of jazz. So it's the point is it's about the mood. So there it was done to make something nice, and because it was done so nicely, then Prabhupada said, "We'll use this for the darshan." But if we think, "Oh wow, we're going to be cool and all that," then generally it's not so cool. You know, it's like those 60-year-old weekend warriors and their Harleys. You know, it's not as cool as they think they are. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, then seeing the Lord is not as important as appreciating Him from the authentic literature or the authentic statements of authorized persons, Nigamana. So that's the point. Seeing the Lord, you may understand Him or not by seeing. It's not by seeing Him you'll understand. It's by hearing from authorized sources. That's how we'll understand. So if you heard properly, then if we see Him, it'll have benefit. But if not, we won't have, you know. Does that make sense? Ravana is also seeing the Supreme Lord, but he thinks he's just some guy. You know, and not only that, he's here with monkeys. You know, so how you know, it's not good. The only reason he's out there fighting with them is because everybody else has been killed by this guy or the monkeys. Right? So then therefore he's coming out. But otherwise, when they came first, he never went out. He sends everybody else first. Because it's a bunch of monkeys. Come on. Right? Yeah. So, like that. So, seeing the Lord is not the main thing. It's being able to appreciate the Lord. That's the main thing. Because then if you appreciate, then if you see, then you'll continue to appreciate. Right?
Regarding the songs, it's just Prabhupada said that has not been approved or sung by bona fide devotees. Prabhupada himself also wrote poetry, and you know, like Japta Maharaj writes poetry. So it's like, it's considered that the poetry or songs which are in line with philosophy and.
Yes, that's the whole point. Yeah. But don't expect that it'll be coming on at Darshan Arti.
No, we don't.
Yeah, okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.